Welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which is on a mission to make America think again. We're not going to tell you how to feel. We're not going to tell you who to vote for. We're just going to bring on the people that are making it happen in the world and put the information out there, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. And you need to know what's going on. And what goes on in the shadows is really what makes the world go round. And tonight, along with my co-host, Liberty Jones, we have the privilege of talking to Tim Hall, who works for Pathways to Housing DC. And we're so happy to have him here, especially at this time of year, because homelessness, you know, it's just starting to get cold, and homelessness is such a major problem. And Pathways for to Housing is doing its best to get people off the street, to help them through a clinic. Well, you'll hear all about it from Tim. Don't let me tell you. Tim, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let me start before Liberty asks you a really brilliant question. Let me start by saying your business card reads harm reduction specialist. What exactly is that? I mean, that's such an intriguing title. What exactly do you do?
Well, as you know, when people experience addiction, it can be difficult to just get off of drugs just like that, right? So you got to crawl before you walk. So basically, my job is to educate the clients on different methods to reduce the risk factors that can potentially lead to being fatal. So, like, for example, if people like to use needles and stuff like that, we like to give them clean needles and syringes, so that at least if they're using, we would like them to be as safe as possible. Or me personally, I go out into the community and provide fentanyl strips, you know, just to test the drugs that they're using, to see if they're laced with high amounts of fentanyl. And, you know, just give out Narcan as well, to stop people from overdosing as well. Just providing these little resources and tools in the community helps tremendously when people go over the edge. So,
well, God bless you for that work. It really is important. And let me say that what Tim does with the needle exchanges was a battle that we fought when I was senator for a long time. The Congress took away our needle exchange program, said we couldn't give out needles, and then they had all sorts of restrictions on it until we became the number one AIDS city in America, and then they relented and they let us give out needles. So thanks for giving out clean needles, and thanks for helping people on the street. They so need it. Liberty, you got something you want to add?
Yeah, so this is an interesting concept to me, because I've always thought that, you know, it's kind of ironic that the ways that we want to help are by supplying clean methods. You know, moving forward, do you think that there's any better initiatives that you would imagine based on your experience in the field? And, you know, maybe this is a misunderstanding. What do you think are some misunderstandings about the syringe exchange process as well, to keep people out there safer?
I think specifically the syringe method, it's frowned upon, because most of the people that are in those lawmaking positions, they haven't had lived experience, so they automatically think you could just drop something, like just automatically quit cold turkey, and there's no relapse period, like your body's not going to call for those drugs. So with that being said, that's probably why there's a disconnect, and why there's not highlighted importance of harm reduction when it comes to that, because if they've never used substances before, then they wouldn't understand how hard it is to get off of those substances.
I understand.
Yeah. And then as far as
Well,
like in general, just because of like, the climate of politics and things of that nature, our administration doesn't believe in the importance of social services. So that's a battle we're fighting daily.
let's talk about that for a second, Tim, because it's a battle that I've been involved in many times. I know that our mayor likes to talk a good talk, but how well does DC, how well does the DC government support you? My feeling is they don't support you nearly enough. Is
Yeah,
that true?
yes, it's absolutely true. I just think that the system overall is overwhelmed. I don't think that this system was designed to last for a long time. I do think that the system was more when it was created, it was more in thought of capitalism. We're right now in a position where, just to make it brief, it's like we're in a battle where we're valuing dollars over human lives right now. And like I said, this administration, they value money over humans. So that's why they're trying to push for the AI initiative and things of that nature, messing up healthcare, because they're just trying to siphon all that money back towards them. As I said, they don't like social services. So one of the many things I'm doing, especially with the National Guard being present, I give out my business cards and I let them know that there is a social service presence that is out here that is mitigating this homeless crisis versus them having to utilize criminal justice interventions. So that's one of the many things I've encountered recently, just educating these National Guard soldiers on social services, because they come from different states where that's not a thing as well, and just changing their mindset, giving them cultural competency is another thing I've been running into as well. A lot of armed forces, they're used to specific, I guess, demographics of people acting with certain behavioral characteristics. So when they come across me, it might remind them of something in the past, and so I see that I'm helping them work through maybe past traumas that they've experienced in their lives as well. So it's just like I said, raising cultural competency, social equity, and just trying to make people see that doing the right thing is okay, and that you're not going to get in trouble or hurt for it.
Well, you know, exactly what you just said, Tim, is exactly why I took my kids to a soup kitchen for 10 years. Their school had a program where they served homeless women once a month. They cooked dinner for them and served about 100 homeless women. And what it taught them, when you talk about things like cultural competency, what it taught them was that the only thing you can say about homeless people is that they don't have a home. They don't have a place to sleep. There's nice homeless people. There's mean homeless people. There's happy homeless people. There's sad homeless people. They come in every shape and size. Isn't that right? And from all walks of life.
Correct.
And this demystified for my children, it demystified the whole homeless thing. And you know, I was encouraged that I had done the right thing when I saw my college-age daughter at the time rush out of a place that we were having lunch and help a homeless guy get his wheelchair up on the curb and push him. People were walking, this is in Chicago, people were walking by him ignoring him. And Trisha ran out and helped him. And I said, you know, thank God I took him for all those years because they learned that the only thing you can say about homeless people is they don't have a home. Liberty. Say something brilliant.
Yeah, so I really appreciate that experience. I think coming to DC, one of my favorite parts when I got here was that the homeless community seemed to be very taken care of. They all had tents. You know, some of them had their homes where they resided, and that I got to see them every day if I wanted to talk to them. And I think what was most disheartening to me on a, you know, I think what the biggest effects I noticed, one of them, after the Trump administration, one of them was that a lot of these homeless people who have been here for a very long time in the same exact spot, some of them up to 20 years, they were dislocated. even though they were unhoused, they had found a home, which I think is a right that I think every human should have. They should be able to feel comfortable in their space. And that to me was very disheartening. It was one of the first things I noticed after Trump's inauguration. And I want to understand when that first happened, when, during that time, I had homeless people come up to me and tell me, like, if you go to Northeast DC, they have crazy measures being taken. During that time, what was exactly going on? What was his first push towards that community? And moving forward, do you think that a lot of it was just for show and that now things are a little back to normal? Or did it take fight to take things back to normal? Are things better or are they worse?
To answer your question, is for sure. He's only well, we've seen evidence of it being for sure. National prime example, National Guard doesn't go east of the river. They don't go past the Anacostia. They don't go into Randall Highlands. They don't go into any of those other spots that a lot of people would consider dangerous. Two, at least the
Wow.
past couple of years that I've been doing social services, they prioritize what is tourist areas, right? So all the tourist areas that, so the downtown area, National Mall, Chinatown,
Wow.
the GT bid, like all those major areas that money is flowing through, tourism is high on, those are high alert areas that we have to prioritize as housing providers to get these people off the streets. As far as what he was doing in Northeast, not too sure about what he was doing in Northeast. I know he was clearing out encampments. Us as housing providers, we were not allowed to provide tents to people because it's against DC, state government laws. They don't want structures obstructing walkways or landscapes, pretty much, because they think that tents take away from the property value ultimately. So that's why he pushed for all those tent structures in Georgetown to get taken down with the Secret Service and everything. And they faked the event to justify them blitzing that encampment. There was a event where two homeless people allegedly got into a stabbing. But there was only Secret Service around that broke it up, and there was no puddles of blood or anything, no caution tape or anything like that. So I found out from one of my clients that happened to bed down over there. But pretty much what I heard is that they staged the stabbing to justify them clearing out that encampment. So they're setting up events to justify them doing things, which, like I said, is not far-fetched. Like look at what they're doing now. They're kind of going against the rules and then trying to lie to justify certain things. Like even with the gentleman they tried to deport that was from El Salvador, they made up so much different things to try and justify it, you know? So that's just the nature of the beast that was voted in. We didn't vote,
Well,
obviously anybody on this podcast didn't vote him in, but yeah.
I don't know about that, but let me tell you that first of all, my wife and I went out looking for the National Guard one day, and the only place we found them was on the mall and in front of Union Station. You're right. No, no,
Right.
not in Anacostia, not in Randall Highlands, none in those areas. And yeah, and the gentleman that you talk about that they deported him by mistake. And you know what? He didn't do anything until the news media got on the fact that they deported him by mistake. Then all of a sudden, they had all the reasons in the world to deport him. It's absolutely crazy, and we're seeing the same thing going on with these poor people in Venezuela. That they're just executing without any due process or by blowing up these boats. I'm a recreational boater who often gets lost, and I wonder how many people that were actually just out there in the Caribbean they've murdered because they need to justify looking like tough guys. Let me
Pretty
ask you a
much.
question. I do a lot. I do a lot of work with veterans, always have. And when I first looked into the homeless situation in DC many years ago, I was shocked to find out that a third of the homeless people are veterans. Do you still find a lot of veterans out there on the street?
Actually, I do. I work alongside the U.S. vets, to pretty much Miss Lana Mormon. She's in charge of the veterans housing and the community partnership. So when I do come across veterans, it's not as frequent, but when I do, I connect them to U.S. vets, and they're pretty good with getting them stabilized and housed. Usually, like I said, when I run into veterans, they're usually like at low barrier shelters and kind of getting lost in the system because maybe the case managers, this field has a high burnout rate, so a lot of people cycle out. So like people just feel like warm bodies after a while. So I've had clients who've had maybe four or five different case managers within a year. So
Wow.
it's pretty hard to pick up the pieces sometimes if you don't have a good case manager that's already collecting everything from all the other agencies. But most of the time, I find veterans very easy to house, especially when they got, the different benefits and things of that nature. It's a lot easier to help them out than the rest of the population. Them and usually families and
Well,
youth.
there should be no such thing as a homeless veteran. I mean, it should be an oxymoron. People that stand up for their country ought to be taken care of. Liberty, what do you got
Hi.
to say?
So I wanted to know more about the immigration situation right now on the DC streets. Have you run across any
Absolutely.
undocumented people who are,
The time.
wow, who are, why, in what contexts? So tell me more about.
Shoot, there's a young lady outside MLK Library across the street from where you met me at yesterday. There's a young lady from El Salvador. Her name's Stephanie. She came over here a while ago. She has kids with her sister in Maryland, but she's kind of on the run a little bit. I guess she got out of a domestic violence situation, and that caused her to be outdoors. And she pretty much has paranoid schizophrenia diagnosis and some other diagnoses. So she sleeps out front of the library every day, including tonight. So tonight I'm going to make sure I give her some essential supplies, hand warmers and things of that nature. I get her clothes like every day. But what we typically did with her, we usually connect with IUTA, or in this case for her, we had to connect her with the El Salvador embassy so that we can work on, we pretty much went through them to get her passport. And once we got her passport this day or Monday, we got the passport. Then we take the passport, we go to 1313 New York Avenue, which is the downtown day service center. We have an office inside of the basement, pretty much runs DMV services. So we provided her passport, and then we created a letter of support, which was pretty much a letter stating or us attesting that she's experiencing homelessness and that we're working with her. With those two documents, we take it to the DMV, and now she'll have a DC ID. Once she has a DC ID, then now she can start applying for benefits, Medicaid, food stamps, things of that nature. But it's really just establishing residency, then establishing an identity, and then everything else. I'm not going to say it's easier from there, but it's a lot, you'll have more access to different resources from there.
Do you find that many of the people you find rely on things like SNAP benefits? We've seen that SNAP benefits were in jeopardy, and they may be in jeopardy again in a few weeks. Are homeless people getting SNAP benefits?
Some are getting SNAP benefits. The ones that have already been in good standings prior to this hiccup, the ones that already were kind of pending getting their food stamps back and everything, they had to go back and re-register. So I'm still working with them on seizing the funds that they're supposed to have this month.
Well, and before we go any further, let me just say that on your website, I see that you've housed 900 people, you've served almost 1,200 people in your clinic. These may be old numbers too, and you've given 2,300 people outreach on the street. So let's give people your website so they can come, because you know what? A couple of days ago was Giving Tuesday, and I think that Giving to Pathways to Housing DC is probably a really good thing to do. So give them your website so you can find it.
Our website is going to be pathwaysdc.org.
There you go. It doesn't get any easier than that. Liberty.
Yeah, so this has been a really interesting conversation. I have to say, it really breaks my heart that there are so many people who are still out there unhoused. I mean, I think that's something that our society will always have an issue with, but it hurts me even more that this winter there's a lot of uncertainty about whether they will still be benefited by the systems meant to take care of them. Do you know of many systems that have been cut short or have been evaporated in this current administration?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of different things. I was gonna say Project Reconnect. They had pretty much Project Reconnect. I use them. That's like a resource for if you want a security deposit and like security deposit in the first month rent. They'll help take care of that. Or the other side of Project Reconnect, if you're trying to go back home and you have a family member out of state somewhere, as long as you can get in contact with them with the case manager, they can buy you a ticket, and if the person's willing to receive you, they can send you back to your family member as well. That program had got slashed because there was no federal funding for it, so they had to scramble around and allocate funds on a private level to try and restart that. Same thing with ERAP. ERAP didn't have enough money, but then they've found frozen funds, and then that's how they opened it back up. I want to say last week or the week before. So it's just because the federal funders are blocking funding people, now everybody's got to be more creative on how to keep their businesses running, especially Pathways. We had gotten a 5-year contract from DHS right before this transition from Biden to Trump. And then once the transition happened, we were waiting on a signature from, I guess, the federal employees, and then we never got a signature. So then it was like we got approved for the funding, but they didn't release the funds. So that was just for my company alone. So I'm wondering how many other companies are sitting in limbo like that, where they got a verbal approval, but there's no sign off on it. So that's where we're at. Luckily enough, Pathways has its own private funding. So despite us not getting the federal funds right away, they were able to fall back on that private funding for a little while. Not every agency has that luxury. And then
Gotcha.
another thing is with that, before I forget, remember earlier in the year, people had a choice of voting for a new stadium or additional housing facilities, and guess what everybody voted for? No, not
You
there was only one person they said that showed up to the meeting protesting moving forward with the stadium remodeling. There was only one person that showed up that was homeless that advocated for the rest of the homeless. It's like 5,000 plus people experiencing homelessness, according to the Pitt count as of last year.
That's crazy. Well,
Yeah.
let me tell you that when I went to New Orleans for a meeting one time, I had a cab driver that took me to the Ninth Ward. He said, "You have to see this." And
Yeah.
he told me, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like 2 years later, and it looked like there was nothing there. There was nothing. The whole
Got
place was
washed away,
down. And he said to me, the Superdome was the first thing they fixed. He said after all that devastation, the first thing that got fixed was the Superdome. And it just shows us where, it just shows you where our priorities are, and they're pretty
Which is
screwed up.
crazy because they housed everybody in the
Right.
Superdome at
They
first. And
did.
oh
Right. It
man.
was, yeah, it is absolutely crazy. And what we're giving shout outs to you guys that are doing such great work. Let me tell you that we've had this woman on the show. She's a personal friend of mine. Her name is Dr. Catherine Crossland. And Dr. Crossland
She works
got
for she works for what is it,
UnitedHealthcare.
I
Yeah.
know Dr. Crossman. We work with her.
Yeah.
She
She's a
works with us
Harvard.
every yeah, she
Yeah,
comes in
she's
the
a Harvard educated doctor. She got her medical degree from Harvard, and she's out there helping homeless people on the street. And God bless her for that. She's been on the show. We'll have her on again. But every time we get on this subject, I like to say something good about her because I just can't believe that. This is a woman
Any
that could be making more money than she needs, and instead she's out there helping people that need to be helped. So God bless her, and God bless all the people that work for Pathways, because you
Yeah,
guys
she's
really are
such an
doing
amazing
God's work.
clinician. For her to go operate in the basement of CC&V and then come over to MLK and do psychosocials in the library and set up shop each week, yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, and there are people, I don't know if people know this, but there are homeless people that they just can't get to go into a hospital. They have to be served out on the street or they don't get served. But let me ask you about that. I noticed again many years ago when I first looked into homelessness that DC had several programs, but there was only one shelter in Montgomery County and one shelter in Fairfax County. Is that still the case that they, it seemed to me that those wealthier suburbs were trying to purposefully push homeless people into the District of Columbia because that's where the services for homeless people were. Is it that you think that's still the case?
Nah, there's more homeless shelters in Montgomery County now. We Pathways has a whole office in Montgomery County right now, so and we partner up with the systems out there. Their system, the housing system, actually mirrors our system in DC, where they got the permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing out there. So they definitely evolved in a short amount of time. Because now we have clients interchanging. They're like, oh, we don't want to be in DC anymore. Okay, so we'll transfer you down to Montgomery County first. And if you don't want to go to Montgomery County, then we can they just opened the portal for Prince George's County's housing authority as well. So they're trying to take in an influx of people and give them vouchers, because as you said before, it's a big push to push everybody out of the city. So they're trying to j make it look a lot prettier than it actually looks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing I got to tell you. When I went to Chicago for the Democratic Convention, the first time I went to Chicago for the Democratic Convention, they took Cabrini Green, which is one of the notorious housing project in Chicago, and they just went and they spray painted everything green. They made it look real pretty because it's by the United Center. You had to go through it to get to the United Center. And they made it look just lovely for. And then I'm not sure that they didn't forget about all those people as soon as the convention was over. They had the mayor of Chicago stay in Cabrini Green one night, but along with her were 200 police officers. So, it wasn't exactly like she just showed up and, was communing with the homeless people. It was all for show. And it's a shame to make them a political pawn.
Right.
And we do that. How are we doing now in DC? I know that Muriel Bowser gets mixed reviews from people on this issue. Do you think she's doing enough? Do you think the city council is doing enough?
They're doing the best they can. She's doing the best she can. She got the most vouchers since Marion Barry last year. I
Is
mean,
that right?
she got the most. It was like well over 2,000 vouchers that she had got last year. And like I said, she was going against the grain. There's so like she can't solve all the city's problems. Now, did she conform to, all the housing crisis, letting all these new developers come in and increase the prices? I mean, yeah and no. At the same time, it's like, I mean, she can't deny people from revitalizing the city, but on the flip side, it's like she can't control everything they do, you know? So I
Well,
see both sides to it. Like even with the thing with Trump, like extending the National Guards, she was just trying to, he was already threatening to strip her of her position anyway. So it was like he wanted to, if I was in her shoes, I'm going to find some middle ground to try and preserve my livelihood. So I did understand that. And that's why I was like, maybe I might not agree with how she executed things, but I saw her trying to appease both sides to preserve herself.
that's good to know. And I should just say, it's my opinion that they're going to use this tragedy where this young woman, National Guardsman, was gunned down, and this other man, I think he's still struggling for his life, another young American. I see the Trump administration using this to crack down on DC, to and maybe Muriel will be replaced by the federal government. Because they're looking for excuses to do this stuff. It's terrible. And that's what we're trying to educate people. So go ahead, Liberty, say something. Educate America.
So, what do you think are some stereotypes that common people who drive by homeless people every day probably assume that are wrong, or stereotypes about, mental health issues that you feel
The
are worsening the community?
they think it's drug use involved. They also might think that the person might be stupid or something, like they might have something, some cognitive issues that might stall them from functioning normally. Or they ultimately they think of them as lesser than themselves. It's something they can look down on.
So explain to me integrated healthcare. That's one of the things that you guys do, because a lot of these people do have drug problems and other problems. I took my kids, like I said, to this homeless dinner program, and it was for women. And the reason that we took the kids there is that it was a lot calmer. CCNV, where I used to hand out blankets, there are a lot of problems down there. It's a integrated shelter. It was men and women in those days, and there were fights and other stuff that we certainly didn't have with the Women's Dinner Program, which was the name of the program I worked on, the dinner program for women. So tell me, how does integrated healthcare work? What do you try to do for people on the streets?
Me personally, with the outreach background, we don't separate mental health, physical health, and housing because in real life, none of those things are separate. Instead of sending people to five different places, we bring everything to one team: medical providers, psychiatrists, therapists, case managers, substance use counselors, housing specialists. We all work together around one client. It's not fix this first and then you get the next thing, it's housing first. Support always. No matter where you are in your journey, we meet people where they're at, literally and figuratively, and build stability from there.
That's a great idea.
It's, yeah. And then it's like they might have, untreated physical health issues, trauma, substance use, or mental health challenges. Instead of treating each issue like in a silo, we have our ACT team, outreach team, and clinical providers that work side by side to pretty much share information and coordinate the proper care that is pretty much exclusive and tailored to that specific person.
Now, do you send people out on the street who are medical professionals, or do you refer people to medical
Look,
professionals, or do you do both?
both. I do both. It depends on the person and the circumstances around the person. Now, like I can give you an example of when I'd send somebody out. So for example, if I have a person that's bedding down out in front of MLK Library, for example, and they don't have they don't really want to go anywhere or anything like that. So I'll talk to Dr. Cross and I'm like, okay, well I need this client to have a psychosocial so that we can then enroll them in behavioral health services with DBH, and then ultimately put in a referral for ACT level services, which is a higher level of care. more intensive wraparound services. So pretty much, yeah, it'd just be like I would have the clinicians come out, help me do the paperwork and necessary assessments. Once that's done, I could send it in and get that person situated, even though they're still outside. Now, an example of somebody that would I would refer to a facility, it would be somebody who might be in a low barrier shelter that is housing motivated, with a hunger to do better for themselves, that have graduated from the pre-contemplative stage of addiction to the contemplative stage, where they're now really assessing their actions and how the value of their actions and what it contributes to their daily lives. When I see that they're in that stage of their life and they're re ready to take more charge, like they're more serious about it than I am, which most of the time when I meet people, on ground level, I got to build them back up, right? So when I see that they're already hungry and they're fed up, that's when I give them a list of resources. I'm like, okay, well, this is your homework. I always try to give them homework before they come back. So that way they really, most case managers, they'll hold your hand when they're providing services. I don't really hold hands. I tell them I'm standing alongside you. We're shoulder to shoulder because this is a team effort. I can't want you to do better more than you want to do better for yourself, because that's not going to work. It's just going to be me getting frustrated and you. We're not meeting middle ground. So it's really just about just building that rapport with the client. And then just like making it very easy for them to navigate so that they can build their self reliance back.
So what can we do? What can we do besides give you money? If people listening, what can they do? Can they put should they write a letter to the mayor's office? Should they contribute money? What should they go? I know that, for example, they had more volunteers at the soup kitchen than they needed for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But then they didn't have them the rest of the year. It's like people come out at this time of year. But what can they do to what can we as average citizens do to help you and your work?
Well, with us, we have different volunteer opportunities. Every January, we have the annual pit count. It's a federal event where we're counting the homeless people for HUD, because HUD needs to know how many people are experiencing homelessness and that need services, because that's how they determine the budget for housing interventions. So every year we go out and do that. That'd be a good time to volunteer so that we can we got to fill out surveys with the clients, and then we put the exact location of where we do the surveys at so that they can pretty much collect all that data. Another thing that we usually do, like I said, we usually collect donations from the community and stuff like that, whether it's clothing or food or whatever, and then we just try to find different ways to pass them out and things of that nature. It doesn't always have to be on a holiday. Sometimes we just randomly do it. Another thing, like obviously Thanksgiving and Christmas, we do company holiday parties for the clients. We go all around the city and grab our clients and just tell them to come have a meal with us, and sometimes they can win prizes and things of that nature too. So we just try to give back to the community and keep them involved. Other things we do, when the client, they express that they want to help and give back to the community, there's things like the peer support program, where they can be peer support specialists under DBH. So I do refer clients to that, when they reach a certain level of stability and can help others. I pretty much they just need three recommendation letters, so I usually sign one off, and then I usually type up two more, and then kind of just send them off to whoever the case managers are. That way they could just I leave it blank enough to where they could just sign their signature or type in their name or whatever, and just kind of keep the ball rolling with the momentum and everything. So, but there's like those volunteer events. We do donations. We're always walking around the community, and me as a case manager, all my colleagues, we all have one night where we do late nights. So Usually it's the late night start from 12 and then we don't finish till 9 p.m. But on days like this where it's considered hypothermia, I didn't come until 2:30 and I don't leave till 11 p.m. So what I'm going to do after I get off the podcast with you all is start from GW Hospital, make my way all the way to NoMa in Eckington on foot. I'm going to have a cart full of essential items. It'll be fleece blankets, hand warmers, sweatpants, thermals, sweatshirts, socks, underwear, bras, toiletries, snacks, waters, of course, just, and then toothbrushes and things of that nature. Anything that somebody would probably need while they're laying down on the ground, I'm going to have it, and I'm going to be passing around for 4 hours. Night.
Sometimes people don't realize that things like toiletries are so important to homeless people. I sit on the board of directors of a foundation which gives out grants in DC, and I'm going to encourage you to apply for one. But one of the things we did when we worked with one of the homeless shelters in Northwest was we asked them what they needed, and they needed washing machines and dryers because these people had no place to wash and dry their clothes. So that's what our foundation did. We bought them a bunch of washers and a bunch of dryers. There's so many needs out there that I don't think people necessarily anticipate. So that's why I encourage everybody to get involved. I'll tell you what, there's no better feeling in my opinion than feeding somebody who's hungry. It really feels good to serve a meal to somebody who needs a meal. So get involved. Liberty, what do you have to say?
So, what do you think is one of the accomplishments that you're most proud of having achieved in the last year? Maybe if it's a personal interaction you had or a case that went well that you supported, what do you think is one of your guys's or most proud of progress in the last year?
Well, I remember we mentioned when you were reading off the website about how many people Pathways house. I was like, I definitely have a good 100 of whatever that lump sum is in on that website. But to me, the success is when I walk around outside. Right before, you and I met each other, or when I approached you, there were so many people that stopped me right before I crossed the street to say hi to you, right? It was so many people stopping me and thanking me. I can't go 5 steps anywhere in the city without somebody recognizing and calling for my name, either asking me for help or thanking me for the help that they have received in the past. It's really cool. That's the biggest thing about this job that I love. When you help somebody, that you will like you get to see them pick up where they left off, like a second chance, and it I guess is nothing more rewarding than seeing somebody smiling was full of despair prior to you helping them.
Yeah, I bet that's absolutely the truth. When I last time I ran for election, I used homeless people. I went to Central Union Mission, which is a place
Yes.
that I know
Yeah, I
you're
walk past
familiar
there
with.
every day.
Yeah, and it's the oldest charity in Washington, D.C. They started because of the homelessness from the Civil War, believe it or not, homeless soldiers. So anyway, I went to them and we hired 25 homeless people. We paid them $15 an hour. We gave them lunch. We gave them Metro cards so they could get around the city and serve at different polling places, giving out literature. And I want to tell you, these people worked them. So they were the best campaign workers I ever had. They so much appreciated the opportunity to make a little money, to have a little food. And afterwards I won the election and we had an election night party and we invited them all to the election night party. Many of them showed up. And I remember the restaurant owner where we had the party coming to me and saying, "I've never seen this diverse a group of people together in one room partying with each other. So, they really they any help you give them, they really appreciate it. And I know the feeling you're talking about, Tim, and it really is a great feeling to know that you've helped somebody that really is in need. So you met Liberty Jones on the street. Did she look like she really needed help? That's what I want to know.
She was a little bit. She was actually talking to one of my clients, and that's what actually intrigued me. Her and I guess maybe a friend was standing talking to one of my clients, and it really intrigued me because most people walk past him.
Right.
He's a very nice guy, very, very nice. He's very, very social, and he has paranoid schizophrenia as well, actually. Like he talks about a lot of different things, and religion, and just politics. All like he's a conspiracy theorist, so I do like having conversation with him. So I found it very intriguing when Miss Liberty was talking to him, and she was engaging him, making eye contact, and I could tell he was happy and he was feeling heard. So that's really what stopped me. And like I said, it just after that, she told me about the podcast and things of that nature, and now I'm meeting you, and now I'm like, okay, now it's all starting to make sense. So again, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's how she met me too. Most people walk by me and say, "Look, don't talk to that crazy old man." But she stopped and talked. So go ahead, Liberty, say something.
I think the most beautiful thing I gathered from this conversation was when you said that one of your favorite parts about this job is that you stand shoulder to shoulder with your clients and the people you work with. And I think that is what needs to be done in many different spheres of America right now. And I really hope that, I loved hearing this conversation because I don't think it's often where you see a, or maybe it is, a former politician speaking to somebody who, puts in the work with the homeless people. So it's really beautiful for me to be able to witness these conversations because I think, we're all active members of the community trying to do better for our country, but we just want to go about it in different ways. And the more we stand shoulder to shoulder aligned, the more unity that I believe will prevail.
It also is, you got to put the right people in position, people who have lived experience, not putting people in who got money. Me personally, the reason why I'm good at this job, because I was homeless for 10 years.
No.
Oh,
Wow.
Why were
yeah.
you homeless? Tell us, why were you homeless?
Oh man, let me see how I can condense this for you all. Okay, so I graduated high school 2010. Parents were in a rocky relationship. We moved to Tampa, Florida, or Odessa, right outside of Tampa. I didn't like it. I saw a Confederate flag all the time. Parents had marital problems. I eventually moved back to Prince George's County, and I lived in my friend's basement. He had a estate house in Bowie, and that was a lesson I learned: don't live and work for the same person. Because then you don't get paychecks. And then you might be short on the rent too, because it's literally he can pay you whatever he wants. So I learned that. Then I lived in then I got kicked out of that basement. I went and stayed with my friend. He lived with his parents in the basement, and well, his parents had the house, but he stayed in the basement. His family's from Sierra Leone, so they were strict African lineage. So once they found that I lived in that house, they kicked me out, and my friend gave me a tent, and then I stayed in the woods for a while. So, and I did hold a job this whole time. I was in food service. And so I was working at Panera Bread, and then I switched over to Red Lobster. So I went from cashier to serving tables and bussing tables. And then just waking up every day doing I call it a bird's bath, where you go to the bathroom. I went to a Starbucks bathroom, they clean it every 30 minutes. So you just clean yourself up. I had toiletries and stuff that I had taken from, the grocery store, go in with an empty backpack and come out with a full backpack. Not something I'm proud of, but I didn't want to ask for help, and I just felt so vulnerable and just ugly. So, I was like, I just need by any means necessary to restabilize. Had I known about all these social service resources, I probably wouldn't have been homeless for the 10 years that I was. But I prevailed, I couch surfed with the college friends and things of that nature, and or I would pay rent to somebody and not have my name on the lease, and then find out that the person didn't pay rent at all, and the fire marshals kicked in the door a couple of different times. So I learned different lessons about housing, and ultimately, at one point, I had an opportunity to get my own housing, and I just seized it and I never looked back. So now when I had talked to people, they're like, oh, I'm homeless, I can't afford this, or I have nowhere to go. I tell people where my experiences, and I'll start off with this is what I did. I'm not telling you to follow to duplicate these steps, but this is what I did when I was in that situation. I would either sleep on a metro train during the day if I didn't get no sleep at nighttime, because you'll know there's always transit police everywhere. So, as long as you can sleep on there, as long as you're the metro's operating. So I would do that, or I was at Howard University at the time, so I would go sleep in the technology building because that was a facility that was 24-hour run. But doing that for X amount of time until I was able to get a good job. I started working at Volunteers of America up on Kennedy Street, and that was my first community support agency I worked with. I did front desk work for the mental health patients, and then I switched over to District Healthcare Services, then Kenara, then Life Enhancement Services. Then I went to Department of Behavioral Health. I did the 988 suicide hotline for 6 months. And then once it ate at my mental and I started seeing ideations, then I quit. And then I came over to Department of Human Services, and I've been here ever since. So I've been in all different parts of the continuum of care. I know how they operate, and that's why I feel like I don't want to say I'm a guru when it comes to housing, but I make sure that I have a good success rate.
Well, you've come a long way, and I admire you for that. And I want you to know that I get involved in some of these issues for a similar reason, a little bit different in that I became an orphan at 15 years old, but I lived in a nice white community. We had no money, we had no, I was on my own, but lots of people rushed in to help me. Lots of people. There were lots of neighbors and friends, and and then I would go back to North New Jersey, which is my hometown, and I would see that none of that existed for those people. And I always said, God, there, but for the grace of God, go I. People were so good to me, and so you have to give back. Well, we're out of time. That's a great place to end. Liberty Jones, as always, thank you. Tim Hall, thank you for the great work you do. I'm going to talk to you. I've got your business card. I'm going to send you some information, and I want somebody from your organization to apply for a grant with our
Yes, sir.
foundation. We give out money, and you guys are a good cause, and we like to work in the DMV, so that's all perfect. And we're going to leave you tonight with one of my favorite songs, and something we should all hope for. This was the number one song in 1944 while we were at war. This is Bing Crosby with I'll Be Home for Christmas. Let's hope everybody has a home to go to in Christmas. And thank you, Tim Hall. See
Thank
you
you.
next week, folks.
Thank you.